This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, 25th of August, 2017. Welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Liz and Gordon Legg have edited the extracts this week. So let's begin with the usual regular notices. And the first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And just to remind you that you can use the buttons on your box and move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And one more reminder for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle, through our website www.winchestertalkingnews.com, all lowercase, no spaces. All you need to do is go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. And so, on to this week's edition of the Chronicle. Reading for you today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Gerry Tuff.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Ros Lydiard. And on to the news headlines, which is the first one will be the new hospital idea, and then under fire, Southern Health Trust said to be improving. And pub set to be relaunched after sale to Chef. First headline story, please, Claire.
New hospital idea. Winchester's Liberal Democrats have called for a new hospital to be built at Sir John Moore Barracks following its closure. The group say building on the site off Andover Road near Littleton, due to be vacated by the Army in 2021, would mean residents benefit from a large employer continuing to provide core medical services in the city. The proposal is an alternative to plans for a critical treatment centre at North Waltham, near Basingstoke, which were given the green light back in 2015, although the multi-million pound project appears to be on hold. The Lib Dems say that the barracks would enable the critical treatment centre and a cancer centre to be built in conjunction, with a new hospital also incorporating parts of Basingstoke hospitals and therefore bringing savings to Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust. If the new site were chosen, they add that the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on Romsey Road should close following the successful opening of the new hospital on the barracks, which only opened in 1986. In a letter, the Lib Dems state, "The original plan for the critical treatment facilities at North Waltham looked sound on paper in its methodology on both medical and for running cost savings. However, the location was not ideal in terms of the infrastructure, location, capital cost and accessibility. We realise the enormous cost of adding another hospital at North Waltham into the Trust's estate brings costs to the NHS which can be ill afforded, and we believe this site could bring a positive income to the Trust." Councillor Jackie Porter said, "We are looking at it because since the original site at North Waltham was prepared, the situation has changed and it's become available. It's a very generous site in terms of size. It's owned by the public and a number of items of infrastructure are already in place. For a councillor in Winchester seeing the implications of residents having to go up to hospital in the countryside, it's an option to be considered. There are really good roads there already. There's a helipad site. It has many of the things that would cost money to be built. We'd like to hear the public view on it. It's certainly something that needs to be looked at. I know the hospital and trust has ambitious plans across Hampshire, but having seen the site, we are impressed. There are fears that the new critical treatment centre at North Waltham would ultimately lead to the RHCH becoming largely a cottage hospital. Senior doctors in the Trust have said that the increasing specialisation of the modern NHS means that more services will have to be centralised at new centres such as at North Waltham. Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, said in a statement, "We have a long-standing commitment to serving the people of Winchester and its surrounding area. With this express purpose, we are working very closely with our commissioners to explore sustainable solutions that will enable us to provide acute services for the whole population we serve across Hampshire. A guiding principle of the local NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight Sustainability and Transformation Partnership, STP, is that the NHS should make the best use of its existing resources. Until we reach the point in the process of having a preferred option, we are unable to pursue options around new developments. If the current RHCH site on Romsey Road should close, the site would be worth tens of millions of pounds to housing developers. City Council leader Caroline Horrell, a Conservative, was asked to comment but declined, saying she had not seen the Lib Dem letter. The NHS is due to announce its STP for services in Hampshire in the autumn.
Under fire, Southern Health Trust said to be improving. A health trust which was at the centre of controversies surrounding deaths which weren't investigated has made a number of improvements. The Care Quality Commission has found Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust has improved its investigations into serious incidents and deaths and other serious management failings. There are a series of scandals over the Hampshire organisation's failure to investigate the deaths of hundreds of people with disabilities and mental health problems. At the time, the Trust didn't have effective arrangements to identify, record or respond to concerns about patient safety issues raised by patients, their carers, staff or by the Care Quality Commission or other organisations. But now the Trust has improved the speed and quality of its investigation reports following serious incidents and deaths. In January, the Trust had completed 97% of mortality reviews within 2 days of the death occurring. In the past, patients, families and partner agencies had concerns about the Trust's complaints processes and the quality of their responses. They found that the Trust had implemented changes to improve the system, although further improvements were still required. Inspectors found, however, there were still delays in providing special mattresses and beds for patients who are terminally ill in community hospitals, and also delays in providing and repairing wheelchairs. Julie Dawes, Trust Interim Chief Executive, said, "This report gives us additional confidence that we're taking the right approach to improving services. I thank all our staff for their continued dedication to providing the best possible care. We're not complacent and fully accept that we have more work to do. We have plans in place to improve each area that the CQC has highlighted. The board has also recently appointed a new substantive chair, new non-executive directors, and is appointing a substantive chief executive. This fresh board will bring the leadership required."
Pub set to relaunch after sale to Chef. Villagers have backed a planning application to give a previously disused pub a new lease of life. The Fox and Hounds in Crawley, near Winchester, has been closed for more than a year, but is now set to open after it was sold for around £650,000 to Lenny Carr Roberts. Mr. Carr Roberts is well known for the way he resurrected the Bugle Inn in Twyford, and villagers are hoping he can do a similar job with the Fox and Hounds. The planning application submitted to Winchester City Council says the pub will have a 90-square-metre restaurant space at the back of the pub. To enable this, an existing outbuilding will have to be demolished. The plans also include building new toilet facilities in a new building in the West Garden and removing the existing ones. More than 25 villagers have written to the City Council to support the plans, including Mrs. Victoria Oliver Balassis, who said, "With so many pubs closing, it's incredibly important, in my view, to keep this intrinsically British tradition alive. A well-run pub brings so many benefits to any village, for instance, providing employment and a focal point for sports teams, local groups and meetings. In short, the pub will bring the community together." Ward Councillor for South Wanston and Mitchell Dever, which includes Crawley, Councillor Stephen Godfrey said, "I think it's very good news that people want to put money back into a community like Crawley." Mr. Carr Roberts has spoken about his excitement at reopening the pub and said, "I'm very pleased and excited about the purchase of the Fox and Hounds. Far too many village pubs have closed in the last 12 years due to poor investment and high brewery rents. Crawley is a beautiful village and deserves a successful, independent village pub. It was 9 years ago that we bought the Bugle Inn after it had been closed for 3 years. After huge investment and hard work, it became Winchester's top-rated restaurant and has been for the last 5 years. The whole Bugle team are thrilled at having a second business to show off their skills. At the Fox and Hounds, we will be investing heavily in the building itself and totally refurbishing the interior and exterior. Our aim is to make the Fox and Hounds the pub in the country you always want to visit." Winchester City Council will decide the plans in the coming weeks, and the earmarked date for the Fox and Hounds to reopen is next spring.
We're going to give you the death notices now. Before we do, we'd just like to mention the passing of Graham Cranmer, who is a regular reader on the Winchester Talking Newspapers and the magazine. And he joined Talking Newspapers at its inception and was a continuing worker all that time until his ill health forced him to retire. He was a very talented man, a writer, an actor, a director, a workshop leader, and many other skills that weren't involved with drama or reading on the newspaper. Graham's readings were always intelligent and very clear, and his sense of humour, his sharp sense of humour, wherever appropriate, was brought into play, which gave much-needed humour on every article on the magazine and the newspaper. And we'll return now to the death notices in the Hampshire Chronicle as published this week. Chaffee, Rosemary Irene Joan Chaffee, passed away peacefully on the 17th of August.
Conway, Margaret Teresa Conway, died on Saturday 12th of August, aged 94.
Darcy, Keir Robert Darcy, on the 20th of August, a much-loved father and grandfather.
Proverbs, Ralph Proverbs, veterinary surgeon, sadly and unexpectedly at home on the 5th of August, aged 88 years.
Robinson, Barbara Jean Tarrant Robinson, died on the 17th of August following a tragic accident.
Smith, Brian Arthur Smith, former Unigate milkman for Crawley and Sparsholt, died on the 15th of August, aged 79.
And Claire is going to read for us this week Christian comment, which I think is contributed by Rosemary Baker. Yes, please, Claire.
She's headed her article, "The Extraordinary Ordinary People." a British paramedic who was repeatedly stabbed while helping victims of a terrorist attack in Finland at the weekend, has denied being a hero, insisting he was merely doing what he'd been trained to do. He said he was not a hero, but a human being who cares for other human beings. In other words, an ordinary man. Of course, we know he was far from being ordinary. Looking at next week's television programmes, I was interested to see a Horizon special on psychopaths and how they developed. I don't recall ever seeing a programme on what makes a hero or heroine, or even more rarely, what makes ordinary people behave heroically in some circumstances when others don't, as it seems to me that most heroes and heroines are in fact ordinary people. This season of the church year, following on from the Sundays after Pentecost and Trinity, is called Ordinary, and the Sundays are the first, second, etc. in ordinary time. I have been pondering what this means for preaching ordinary sermons, perhaps for ordinary Christians. The world often seems a very dark place, floods and droughts, from climate change, as well as earthquakes and hurricanes, wreaking havoc on the poorest people who have no resilience and no food stores to rely on. And as if natural disasters were not enough, we have people setting killing as many people of opposing beliefs as they can. I recently came across an organisation I had not come across before called Team Rubicon. It was formed from an initial group of volunteers who went to give help after the earthquake in Haiti in 2010. When they crossed the river that divides Haiti from the Dominican Republic, they realised there was no going back, as when Julius Caesar crossed the Rubicon River in Italy when he invaded. Hence the name they chose for themselves. Many of the volunteers were ex-servicemen or veterans who had found themselves without jobs or roles and lacked purpose in their lives. Enabling them to be part of this organisation gave them useful roles once more, and through helping others they were helped themselves. Since then, Team Rubicon has grown and become a well-organised disaster charity, responding both to major world disasters and smaller ones closer to home, like the recent flash floods in Cornwall. They often go the extra mile and go further than other rescuers and reach parts others cannot reach. They wouldn't see themselves as heroes and heroines, but ordinary human beings helping other humans in the darkness and distress of their lives, and in doing so, making a real difference. And that was written by Rosemary A. Baker.
Thank you very much, Claire. Now we're going on to letters to the editor this week, and it's another very mixed bag. And Richard, you're going to start us off, please.
Thank you, yes. And this letter, entitled Bar End is Better, comes from Catherine Morris. The new sports and leisure facility at Bar End will replace a crumbling, inadequate facility at River Park that cannot be simply upgraded. A community facility must accommodate an expanding population, and Bar End offers such scope. Facilities such as a 50-metre pool that can be divided and used as two pools is a better resource for the community than that offered by the existing facility at River Park, which cannot combine user groups. Careful planning may result in profitable active facilities and further justify the investment, as has happened with similar facilities elsewhere in the country. The university is providing significant investment into this community facility. Whilst Bar End has excellent access by road, bus and a cycle track, the challenge for the City Council is how best to enhance the access for those within the city who currently walk to River Park. Catherine Morris, Carmen's Lane, Compton.
This one is headed Don't Compare, comes from Councillor Peter Edgar, who is the executive member for Education, Hampshire County Council. When I visit Hampshire's schools each week during term time, the young people never cease to impress me with their enthusiasm for learning. I have a great deal of confidence in them, and I'm sure those who sat their GCSE exams this year will do well. However, with results due out today, I would like to remind students and their families of the significant changes that have been made nationally. These will have an impact this year, not necessarily on performance, but on people's perception of that performance. Firstly, in September 2015, more demanding curriculum content was introduced by the government and exam boards for GCSEs in maths, English language, and English literature. Secondly, the Department for Education has introduced a new method of grading for GCSE examinations, with results in maths and English being rated using a scale of 1 to 9, with 9 being at the top of the scale. Consequently, the bar has been raised far higher for maths and English for this and future years. It is important to remember that there is no straightforward correlation between these grades and the A star to G grades used previously. Owing to these significant changes, there is the potential for a great deal of misunderstanding. It's very important to me that families and pupils understand that this year's results cannot be compared with previous years. Any perceived dip in English and maths results may not in fact reflect a drop in performance in these subjects. Secondary schools, colleges and training providers will be fully aware of this and will be ready to take these new benchmarks of success into consideration on applications for further study or vocational training. Councillor Peter Edgar, Executive Member for Education, Hampshire County Council, The Castle, Winchester.
Pizza, please. Could some enterprising person please think about opening an Italian restaurant in Chandler's Ford? We have lots of different types of restaurants available, e.g. 3 Indian, 1 Thai, and several Chinese, as well as plenty of fish and chip shops and pizza parlours, but no Italian. Chandler's Ford is now a huge place, and I think it would be very successful. How about the site soon to be vacated by the NatWest Bank in Winchester Road? Easy parking is available on site. Could someone please give it a go? Valerie Knight, Westwood Gardens, Chandlesford.
And this is a letter about the University of the Third Age, which comes from Frieda Bates. The Winchester branch of the University of the Third Age has a membership of over 1,300 and more than 100 interest groups. Don't be put off by the title. We're a bunch of ordinary people from all walks of life meeting together to share experiences, knowledge, skills, and visit places of interest to make retirement even more enjoyable and fun. We're constantly striving to make our organisation more accessible and available to everyone over the age of 55. Our regular newsletter is packed with good stuff. At the moment, we're seeking to identify members and potential members with visual difficulties and no internet access, but who would enjoy receiving a large print hard copy of the newsletter. If you are or know of such a person, please contact Frieda Bates, Secretary, on 01962 855707. That's 01962 855707, so that we can make this possible. If you do have internet access, but please check out our brilliant website. You might just find something that grabs your interest, and for just £8 a year, it's a bargain. That's Frieda Bates, Western Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
This is Local Life, and it comes from David Hansen. In the early 1950s, I was hunting communist terrorists in Malaya. My mother, living in Byton, read the Hampshire Chronicle each week, then, with loving care, wrapped it and sent it to me by sea mail. If I was in camp, I received it 6 weeks later, in the normal way, by the excellent Forces Mail. If I was operating in the jungle, it used to be dropped by parachute with other mail. I always enjoyed sitting under a big tree and reading all about the activities of the Courtney Tracy Otterhounds and Ramley Vale's day out following the bitch pack of the HH. I read which of my friends had appeared before the magistrates in Alsford and Broxford and who had been sitting on the bench. I read all about local activities in Byton, written up with great care for 2 old pence a line by Miss Elsie Marshall. In other words, the paper was a historical record of what had happened. Oh, today, I fear, it seems to be largely a notice board advertising what is happening in the future. Why? David Hanson, New Farm Road, Alsford. And the editor has taken his right of reply to say, the Chronicle still has numerous reports of local life, council meetings and court cases, as well as highlighting forthcoming events. It is still an historical record. Editor.
This letter from Mrs. Pearl Gibbons is about the sad decline of Nun's Walk. I would like to bring attention to the state of the river in Nun's Walk. Some years ago, a considerable amount of money was spent on a project to improve this area for wildlife. When I first moved here 47 years ago, it was teeming with wildlife, ducks, swans, geese, herons, voles, to name just a few. It is now no longer a pleasant walk or place to sit. It's now overgrown with weeds, nettles, overhanging trees, with hardly any view of the river. A sum of money has been provided to improve an area known locally as the BMX track. Surely some money could be provided for Nun's Walk. This area will be used far more as a walkway by residents, old and new, than a play area. Whilst new houses have been increased in Abbots Barton, we must be the only estate in Winchester without a local shop or communal facilities, both of which are sorely needed. Mrs. Pearl Gibbons, Chandler's Road, Abbots Barton.
And this from Nikki Gottlieb, who's writing about open days. There appears to have been much debate in recent weeks about the introduction of an entrance charge to the Great Hall. Readers may be pleased to know that the Great Hall will be participating in Heritage Open Days this year, September the 7th to the 10th, and therefore waiving its entrance fee, as well as offering additional activities, especially for the festival. Other attractions offering free entry on certain days in Winchester and around the district during the festival include the Hospital of St Cross and National Trust properties Winchester City Mill, Hinton Abner and the Vine at Sherburn St John. You will still be charged for entry into the cathedral, but free tours around the cathedral close will be offered instead. Winchester College will give free guided tours of the college and treasury, as well as limited tours of War Cloister, Fellows Library, Science Collections and Archives, buildings not normally open to the public. The Friends of King Alfred buses are due to run a special free vintage bus service from the Broadway on Saturday, September the 9th, but this may be subject to works to the bus garage being completed in time. Heritage Open Days is one of a very limited number of festivals in Winchester that offers events completely free of charge over 4 days. To keep it free, the festival relies on sponsors, funding and the goodwill of many individuals and local businesses who volunteer their time and effort to put on special events and displays for the public to enjoy. This year's theme is All Our Stories, and with over 70 local events that include guided tours, walks, performances, exhibitions, workshops and talks, there should be something for everyone. Some events need to be booked in advance due to limited capacity, but all up-to-date information on the festival can be found on the Winchester Heritage Open Days website, and programmes are available from the Tourist Information Centre. They say that the best things in life are free. Heritage Open Days are just that, and a wonderful way of celebrating our fantastic heritage with the whole community. Nikki Gottlieb, Winchester Heritage Open Days, East Stratton.
Well, the previous letter mentioned the Great Hall, and so does this one. And it's entitled, Where's Pepper? was slightly gobsmacked to see Councillor Eileen Berry's letter comparing a visit to the Great Hall in Winchester with a visit to Paulton's Park in the Chronicle, August the 10th. Admittedly, it has been many years since I've gone into the Great Hall, but perhaps other readers could confirm or deny the presence of roller coasters, splash parks, and Peppa Pig in the hall. And that comes from Sarah Gorman, Partrey Close, Chandler's Ford.
This letter from Robin Atkins is headed ARC Bar Solution. Right. Albury Park Centre Bar. The football club opened the bar on Saturday, August the 12th, for their home game versus Brockenhurst. The bar was run by an outside bar team headed by Jess and will be open for all the rugby and football club matches at a rental charge by New Alresford Town Council of £110 per month on a three-month trial basis. This is what the sports club require, and they have bar-licensed professionals to take care of their needs, whilst the town council collects the rental income with no responsibility. This is what the town council auditors require, whilst Alresford residents do not need to worry about the council getting involved with staff and cash. This is the right and sensible solution at last. Robin Atkins, former chairman, New Alresford Town Council, Lindley Gardens, Alresford.
Thank you all very much. That certainly was a mixed bag, wasn't it? Hampshire Chronicle's roving reporter has been out again this week and asking the question of the public in Winchester, do they agree with the Crown Prosecution Service ruling that online abuse should be treated the same as abuse in real life? And Claire has their answers.
Sierra Schwartz of Springvale Road, Winchester, said, absolutely. I think it's really important that you can't hide behind a computer and that people are protected by laws and justice. Owen Norgate, who's 33, of Staple Gardens, Winchester, he said, if it's really bad, I think they should face punishment, but it depends how serious the offence is. Katie Cavey, who's 28, from Hairstock, said, I think any kind of abuse, either physical or emotional, deserves the same punishment. I have worked in mental health and seen the effects of it firsthand. And Maria Roberts, who's 32, from Stanmore, said, I think it should be the same. People should be treated the same and have the same protections from the law, whether the offence occurred online or in the street.
Fairly unanimous, aren't they? Thank you very much, Claire. Well, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. All lowercase and no spaces. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester SO23 8AL. And if you're in Winchester, you could just drop by their offices. Chronicle Comment this week talks about the Village Pub set to reopen. Shocker. That's how it's headed. And he goes on to say, splendid news that the Fox and Hounds pub at Crawley looks set to reopen after being closed for several years. Lenny Carr Roberts, who, against the odds, resurrected the Bugle Inn in Twyford and is keen to achieve the same thing in another village near Winchester. He has applied for planning permission to expand the food side of the business. Now, some purists may sniff. But what would they rather? A closed traditional pub or a vibrant pub restaurant? And anyone familiar with the Fox and Hounds before it closed will remember a strange place that, in the words of the Hampshire Campaign for Real Ale Pub Guide, was evocative of the sets of country's inns in 1950s British films. Across the county, Many rural and small town pubs have closed in recent years. In Alresford, the Running Horse and Peaceful Home, Bishop Sutton, the Plough, Sutton Scotney, Sadler's and Bullington Cross. Oslebury, Shearer's Arms, Compton, Captain Barnard, Ropley Anchor, Checkers and Star, Colden Common, Old House at Home, Black Horse, Twyford, the Dolphin, Westmere and the Red Lion. The list is long. But Mr. Carr Roberts has shown that customers will respond to a good landlord. The days of surly staff serving their mates first are largely a thing of the past. Public houses are a unique feature of this country, and they have shown that by upping their game, they have a future. Now, Steve Brine has written from Westminster on the subject of hospital services. Let's hear what he has to say, Jerry, please.
When I was first elected more than 7 years ago, I remember people predicting the imminent closure of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Some of them, those speaking with a clinical understanding, had a point. The old trust was in debt, and the wider Hampshire health economy had no plan to transform services in a way that brought together hospital treatment with primary, community and social care to secure improved outcomes for patients. There was also little scope to recognise that each area has different challenges. For instance, we do really well on one-year cancer survival rates, but the demographics in this part of the country mean we could do better when it comes to stroke prevention. The National Health Service reforms of 2010 swept away layers of expensive bureaucracy and formed local clinical commissioning groups, while the creation of Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust, covering Winchester, Andover and Basingstoke, was a landmark moment for the acute sector. The Hampshire STP, Sustainability and Transformation Partnership, builds on all of this and promises to inject long-term thinking into how the NHS delivers care in an ageing population. It would fill 100 columns to cover it all, and much of it's uncontroversial. But it's changes to the hospital services we need when we're acutely unwell, and of course obstetrics, that will create the headlines. I have yet to meet a constituent who doesn't want to be taken to the right place to receive the most appropriate treatment, should they suffer a stroke or a heart attack, for instance. The position today is that an ambulance called for the former would blue light you to Winchester, while the latter would see you taken to the cardiac specialists in Basingstoke. A&E in Winchester today is something of an oxymoron. If you have an accident, you'd probably take yourself into the Romsey Road Hospital. If you're an emergency, the truth is you'd know little about it. South Central Ambulance would triage you to the right place. The distinction is, bluntly, between whether you walk or you're carried in. This autumn, we'll finally see recommendations as to the future configuration of local hospital services. For the reasons I've outlined above, we need to future-proof the NHS in this part of Hampshire so it can be there when we need it. As an experienced constituency MP, I know we must keep cool heads and listen to what the clinicians are saying, but also to understand what the Royal Hampshire County Hospital actually does right now. Above all, this is too important for short-term party politics, so let's leave that at the door. As someone else once said, Winchester deserves better.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jerry. Khalid Aziz has contributed his thoughts this week, Richard. Please.
He has indeed, and he's entitled them Laughing in the Face of Terrorism. Les Ramblas is a must-see attraction for any visitor to Barcelona. It's a series of streets running north-south, down to the sea, the main one being La Rambla itself. There's a gentle slope, not unlike that of our high street in Winchester, but there the comparison ends. It's tree-lined, which the high street really isn't. It can get stinking hot, which the high street seldom does, and until last week the only issues that might blight a visit would be the pickpockets and frisky prices of the restaurants. Car traffic is usually pretty sedate due to the volume of traffic, so it's hard to see how the white van, which killed 13 and injured 100, managed to get up enough speed to do so much damage. But, as they say in security circles, terrorists only have to get lucky once. And so Barcelona joins the growing list of sorrowful cities that have suffered at the hands of the so-called Islamic State, along with London, Paris, Brussels, Berlin and Manchester. What's really worrying is that as security tightens in capitals, second and third cities will be increasingly targeted. Is anyone safe? The answer is, strictly speaking, no. But applying statistical probability, we're probably almost as safe as we ever were. What's chilling, of course, is just how many plots have been foiled. The Spanish security service seem to have done as well as any in rooting out terror cells. So what to do? A week on, and by the time you read this, Barcelona may well have begun to fade in public memory, the event complying with the inverse square law of news, the significance and enduring memory fading the further away you are in time and distance. There may, by the time you read this, have been other atrocities, who knows? The media tends to focus on fatalities, and as months pass, is poor at reporting how survivors, often with life-changing injuries, are faring. We will, of course, continue to be vigilant as instructed. But we need more than this. In the aftermath of the London Bridge attack, I made a point of walking across the bridge a day later, in a defiant gesture of business as usual. I wanted to have lunch in Borough Market, mindful of the disruption caused to livelihoods there, but it was still closed off. As I crossed the bridge, I witnessed a gathering of elders from many Muslim organisations unified in their condemnation of terrorism. A fine gesture. But do we need to go further? The perpetrators of terrorism are usually young men, rebels with a cause. Fundamentally, they believe it is manly and cool to kill and maim. When we, with justification, condemn their actions, it serves to make them, if they haven't been shot, and those who remain, to plan further outrages. They feel big, because for the first time in their pathetic lives they've been noticed. What do such young people really fear? Not death. That brings glory. The answer is ridicule. Perhaps we should bring that into play. Of course, various conventions prevent the parading of prisoners, but the ridicule I'm thinking of should start earlier in the process. It's bonkers to bend over backwards to respect and not call out as laughable those who perpetrate barbaric practices, whether it be terrorist attacks, female genital mutilation, or the grooming and sexual exploitation of young white girls because your culture teaches you to judge them as trash. Churchmen urge dialogue, but dialogue's useless if it isn't coupled with plain speaking. Those who run mosques will insist their religion is peace-loving. Certainly, that's the way in which I was brought up in Islam. Thus I was taught, just as I was when instilled too with Christianity. But decent Muslims need to call out the deviant cankers in their midst, just as Christians need to do the same with their so-called brothers and sisters who support homophobia and FGM. Ridicule could just turn out to be a powerful tool. Enough of jaw-jaw. Let's try ha-ha.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you very much. We've got some items from Belgarum now, and Claire has the first one about a few chickens, I think.
So it says. Hens saved from table. Three generations of hens, originally destined for slaughter, have been rehomed by a welfare charity. The flock, known locally as the Red Combs Display Team, in recognition of their similarity to the RAF Red Arrows, after being rehomed by British Hen Welfare Trust. Biggie, Ginger, Pumpkin, Nugget, Puma and Apache were adopted by hen lover Joanna Adey, who lives in Eastleigh. Joanna said, "Once the girls get home, I'm always surprised by how quickly they settle into their new lives and start to show their own personalities. They steal your heart as well as your chair. Tom Whitten from the Trust said, adopting our hens is life-changing for the hens and their rehomer. They make wonderful pets and most are happy to continue laying a tasty egg, providing a daily treasure hunt for those who give them a second chance in life. The British Hen Welfare Trust is well known for its work in rehoming commercial laying hens, and through its nationwide team of 450 volunteers, has found pet homes for more than 575,000 hens since hatching in 2005. The charity also educates the public on how they can make a difference to hen welfare through shopping and eating habits. Anyone interested in adopting a hen can call 01884 860 084.
I'm thinking about it already. My cats will love them. Jerry next, please.
Phone heads home. A Boomtown attendee was left speechless after reuniting outnumbered star Ramona Marquez with her missing phone following a three-day event. Connor Parkinson, 18, thought he had found his friend's lost iPhone during the musical festival, but after realising he'd made a mistake, gave his address to a man who called the number on Monday afternoon, claiming it was his. Hours later, as Parkinson napped following a weekend of dancing, he was awoken by actress Marquez and her father, who had made the call. "I did a double or triple take," Parkinson said, adding, "I was a bit surprised, and then it was like, are you who I think you are?" And she said, "Yeah." "I was a big fan when I was younger. I'd watch it all the time." After asking for a quick photo because my mates won't believe me, Parkinson from Locks Heath sent the picture to his sister. She promptly posted it to Twitter, where it has garnered more than 4,200 retweets and 40,000 likes. "It's blown up. It's just gone mad," he said.
Thank you, Jerry. Richard, rock and roll.
Yeah, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Mm.
It seems Bel Garum last week traduced the place of Winchester in the history of rock and roll in an article on the Amplified page about the reformation of the local punk band, The Bar. The column only highlighted the drummer of Razorlight, Andy Burrows, formerly of Westgate School and Peter Simmons College. Brendan Danikin contacted us to point out that the 1989 Rock Gazetteer of Great Britain. Its pages reveal that Mike Batt of Womble's fame also went to Simmons. Brian Eno studied at Winchester School of Art. 50s rocker Terry Dean was called up for national service at the Peninsula Barracks. The Life was signed by EMI but immediately dropped. Thieves Like Us had a strong following in the late 1970s. Robin Hitchcock grew up locally and mentions the city in his song Element of Light. Graham Nash of Crosby, Stills and Nash wrote Cathedral after a tour around the great building, reputedly high on LSD. And of course, in 1966, the new vaudeville band penned Winchester Cathedral.
Indeed they did. On now to historical items, and that's with the mini news clips starting with 200 years. And this one's mine. 200 years ago, Monday, August the 25th, 1817. A modern writer gives the following enumeration of a female eye: the glare, the stare of the leer, the sneer, the invitation, the defiance, the denial, the consent, the glance of love, the flush of rage, a sparking of hope, the languishment of softness, the squint of suspicion, the fire of jealousy, and the lustre of pleasure. Lady Morgan, in her book on France, has been lavish in her praise of the bravery of the present youth of France at the expense of their fathers. According to her, till the last 20 years, Frenchmen had neither talent nor courage. The aged are, in her mind, cowards and dotards. The next item is about a fire, and it's a few nights since a fire occurred at an inn in Leicester, occasioned by the negligence of the ostler. When the fire broke out, two boys, who were going to Worcester to school, were asleep in a room up three pairs of stairs. When alarmed, they attempted to escape by the stairs, but these were on fire. At this dreadful moment, the eldest, about 11 years of age, proposed to his companions to escape by the windows. They immediately threw their boxes out of the window, dragged the bedstead toward it, and tying the blankets, sheets and counterpanes together, fastened them to the bedpost and descended without injury, and the ostler perished in the flames.
100 years ago, Saturday, August the 25th, 1917. A combined offensive on the part of the English, French and Italian armies has hit the enemy very hard and has brought huge tolls of unwounded prisoners. The British attacks were made at two points on the Ypres sector with excellent results, many enemy forts being taken. The French stroke was made on a wide front north of Verdun, and in addition to the 7,600 prisoners being captured, much ground has been won and consolidated, and the defences thereby strengthened. The Italian offensive was on the Isonzo front, met with even greater success, no less than 16,000 prisoners being captured, as also a considerable number of guns. And the second item, also to do with the war, really. Blackdown explosion. The deputy coroner for Aldershot opened an inquest on Thursday at the Cambridge Hospital on the bodies of four soldiers who died at the hospital from injuries received through the explosion at a bomb store in Blackdown Barracks near Aldershot on Monday afternoon, when the soldiers working at the store were killed or injured. The four men who died in the hospital were all bombing instructors and belonged to the London Regiment.
50 years ago, Saturday, August the 26th, 1967. And a letter to the editor. Sir, when the streets of the city of Winchester are congested, we all tend to blow our tops and say things like, they should do something about it. We tend to think this is something created by other people. Yet our changing shopping habits cause much of this frustration. The number of shops has decreased, but the number which remain attract more customers. Their dock turnover is greater, which means more and more delivery lorries trying to get to the centre of the town in which these shops are located. Add to this the cars of the shop's customers and chaos ensues. The cost of this congestion is estimated to cost those making deliveries between 500 million and 1,000 million per annum. Roads and vehicles both need heavy capital expenditure, yet the roads, for various reasons, are used fully for comparatively short periods each day. Yours, Maurice Walbridge, 37 Stockbridge Road. And the second item. At a meeting of the Winchester and District Employments Committee, manager of the Employment Exchange reported that although the employment position in the area compared favourably with the regional and national position, the season reduction in the numbers registered as unemployed normally experienced at this time of year had not materialised. It seemed inevitable that numbers would rise again in the autumn, and depending on the severity of the winter, might equal or even exceed the peak figures of last winter. Past experience had shown much could be done to ease the difficulties of workers caught up in the seasonal problems if only employers foreseeing reductions in staff brought the Ministry of Labour into the picture earlier, and those seeking labour notified their vacancies in good time.
25 years ago, Friday, August the 28th, 1992. At least 25 shops and restaurants now stand empty in Winchester, and a similar number of newly built premises are vacant as the country struggles to overcome the worst recession since the war. City centre shops have suffered a drastic downturn in trade over the past 2 years, as shoppers struggle to pay high mortgage bills and cope with redundancy. Two major chains, Currys and John Menzies, are pulling out of Winchester Centre, and doubt has been cast over the future of three Ratner Group's jewellery shops in the High Street, which includes H. Samuel and Ernest Jones. A Hampshire Chronicle survey shows that five shops are empty in the High Street, a further five have shut up shop in the Square, six are empty in Parchment Street, including two new premises, and four are vacant in the Broadway and Chesil Street area. And the second item, weekend bungee jumping at a farmer's field in Fourmarks has attracted hundreds of daredevil participants and angry opposition from local residents. The Jump Master Bungee Company has been offering jumps from a 160-foot high crane on land at Southwood Farm, Headmore Lane, at weekends through the summer. Initial jumps, which have to be pre-booked, cost £32.50, and each event has attracted 60 to 70 jumpers. But while people plunge towards the ground, tied by their ankles to an elastic rope, neighbour John McAllier lives in fear an accident will occur. This is a demented thing that has been going on. It is desperately disruptive to have jumpers screaming throughout the day at what amounts to the bottom of my garden. We don't want a tragedy, and we have a constant feeling that it will happen.
Thank you all very much for those, and we're moving on to what's on in and around the region for the next couple of weeks. Now, we've got lots of summer shows, but I'd just like to bring this one to your attention. It's in Littleton. It's on August the 31st, and it's the Children's Pet Show in Littleton Recreation Ground, the Hall Way, Littleton, Winchester, and there's a postcode, SO22 6QL. The owners are to arrive from 4pm onwards to register their pets, judging to commence promptly at 4:45. There is an arena and show tents. Adult spectators, £2, and children go in free. And refreshments are available. I think that's probably one of the loveliest summer show with children and their pets. Talks and meetings. There's one interesting one. I'm definitely going to this. Saturday, September the 9th. If only they didn't speak English. It's Winchester Cathedral's Friends annual lecture, and it begins at 9:30pm. And the talk is by John Sopel, journalist, reporter from the White House for the last few months, sharing the ups and downs of Donald Trump's extraordinary presidency with viewers across the country. John Sopel uses his experience travelling aboard Air Force One, interviewing President Obama, questioning President Trump, gun shows, Missouri riots, to show that the USA is now more than ever a truly foreign land. And there'll be a book signing after the talk, £22, concessions for multiple purchases. And that's from Winchester Cathedral. The box office number, if you want to go to that talk, is 01962 857 257. 01962 857 257. I would say that's a talk not to be missed. Well, at least for me it is. A concert on Saturday, September the 9th, Forres Requiem. That's at the Church of St Cross, St Cross Road, Winchester. And it's at 7:30. It's an evening of choral works performed by choral scholars from the University of Cambridge in aid of cancer research, UK's brain tumour research. Tickets are £10, students are £5, and here's the number. It's 07809 229 292. 07809 229 292. or you can go to www.jumblebee.co.uk. That Jumblebee is all lowercase, J-U-M-B-L-E-B-E-E. I think that would be an absolutely beautiful concert to listen to. Singing for Wellbeing. This is at the United Church in Jury Street, a regular meeting in Winchester. It's for people with some memory loss to meet and sing together in a social environment. Partners and carers are invited to attend. It's the Winchester Live at Home scheme, and that's 01962 890 995. 01962 890 995. Every Monday, singing for well-being. We mustn't forget theatre, must we? No, we're going to go to... Yes, Chesil Theatre is going to be doing a production of Blithe Spirit. And that's Saturday to Saturday, September the 16th to the 23rd. And that's all from What's On for me for this time. And we'll just move on to the general news in a moment. And before we go on to the general news, I'll give you the lighting up times. Starting on Saturday the 27th of August, the sun will set at 8:04 p.m. And on Wednesday the 30th of August, the sun will rise at 6:16 a.m. and will set at 7:55 p.m. Those darker evenings are moving fast, aren't they? And on to the general news. And Jerry, can we have your first item, please?
Family tribute to city crash victim. Tributes have been paid to a pensioner who died after being hit by a car in Winchester. Barbara Robinson died in hospital last Thursday following the collision on St Cross Road on Saturday afternoon. The collision involving a Vauxhall Corsa happened between the Bell Inn public house and the junction with Mead Road at around 2:50 p.m. Mrs Robinson, 79, of Falconview, Badger Farm, was taken to Southampton General Hospital, but died on Thursday. The driver of the Corsa, a 20-year-old man from Winchester, was uninjured. The family of Mrs Robinson paid tribute to her. They said, "Barbara Robinson had lived in Winchester for most of her life. For many years, she worked at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital as an HR administrator and brought tireless energy and humour to her work there. Shortly before she retired, she was presented to the Queen in recognition of her service there. After her retirement, and more so following the death of her husband, Austin, she became involved in the community in and around Oliver's Battery, both participating in and organising events for the Battery Club. She was a friendly soul with time for everyone. Barbara was married to Austin for 56 years and succeeded him by a little over 2 years. She leaves behind a large family of children, grandchildren and great-grandchildren who will all love and treasure her memory. The family wish to pay particular thanks to the teams at Southampton General Hospital, Wessex Neurological and to the police who attended to her during this tragedy, and who've all displayed tremendous professionalism and caring.
Crime down at Boomtown. Crime at Boomtown near Winchester was down, police have revealed. Police say that crime at the event was significantly lower than last year. This year there was a heavier police presence at the event, which attracted 60,000 people, and armed officers were spotted inside. In previous years, the event has had controversy over drugs use. Last year, Olivia Christopher was found dead in a tent after consuming a variety of drugs. And in 2014, Ellie Rowe, 18, from Somerset, died after taking ketamine. Overall, it's had 4 fatalities in the last 6 years, and organisers have tried to solve the issue by having an on-site drug testing facility run by The Loop. More than 1,000 drug samples were tested, which is more than they've tested at any other festival. A spokesperson for Boomtown said, "We got the message out and warned people about substances that cause harm. It feels like we've made a big step in raising awareness and helping to educate people." The event, now in its 8th year, had nearly 50 fewer reported crimes compared to 2016. a large proportion of crimes related to drugs, with 17 people dealt with for drug possession and 33 people for possession with intent to supply. There's been a decrease in the thefts from tents, with 38 reported so far, compared to 71 last year. Meanwhile, violence and sexual offences remained low, and 4 assaults being reported and 3 robberies. 1 sexual offence was reported. Superintendent Jason Kenny said the increase in drugs seized demonstrates that the drugs messages going out to festival goers is working and people are using the amnesty bins. Once on site, preventative measures, including dedicated security staff and specialist officers, have helped reduce the potential supply and use of drugs at Boomtown Fair. We continue the excellent partnership working across all agencies throughout the planning process and the actual event itself. In terms of noise complaints, Winchester City Council say there were only 3.
Flood defence set to be unveiled. Winchester's new flood wall was due to be unveiled as part of a £1 million project to protect the city following major flooding in the winter of 2013-14. Excuse me. A new low wall has been installed, featuring openings for everyday access, which can be closed when needed with gates to protect the River Park area, including St Bede's School, Winchester School of Art, homes and businesses. The wall was officially unveiled after the Chronicle went to press. County Council leader Roy Perry said, "This flood barrier provides much needed relief and peace of mind for residents in the St Bede's and River Park areas, which were badly flooded in 2000 and 2001 and 2013-2014, following prolonged periods of heavy rain. Flooding is a shared problem, which is why a shared solution was needed. I'm grateful that Winchester City Council, the Environment Agency and the University of Southampton have worked with us to build this flood defence." Councillor Jan Warwick, County Council portfolio holder for Transport and Engineering, said, "We all recall how disruptive the floods were in 2013-14. These measures should help to reduce the risk of flooding and will hopefully provide reassurance in terms of preventing the damage floodwater causes to private and public property. The scheme is a good example of different parties coming together in order to find a way to tackle the problem of flooding and shows our collective commitment to investing in the future of Winchester." Wesley Jones, flood team leader at the Environment Agency, said, "This scheme has combined central and local government funding to quickly and efficiently deliver a reduced risk of flooding to nearby properties. This work complements the agency's recent construction of the natural flood storage area upstream, so that Winchester is now in a much better position to manage flooding."
Councillors quit over homes. 2 Liberal Democrat councillors have quit their party over plans to build thousands of homes near ancient woodland. Councillor Steve Sollett and Councillor Sarah Bain have resigned from the ruling Liberal Democrats group on Eastleigh Borough Council following their concerns about the deliverability and viability of the scheme. They are now sitting as independents, but Council Leader Keith House has hit back and said the rebels had taken a decision on the local plan before all the evidence was made available. As previously reported by the Chronicle, during a full council meeting on July the 20th, borough councillors indicated the area to the north and east of Bishopstoke and Fair Oak and south of Colden Common as the preferred location for a new development which could see 5,200 new homes, shops, schools, open spaces and a new access road north of Albrook, Bishopstoke and Fair Oak. Eastleigh's proposals have stirred strong opposition in Colton Common and Twyford because of local fears of the knock-on impact. A final decision will not be made until at least this winter and is subject to the results of surveys aimed at showing the impact that the development could have on traffic and environment. But the plans, known as Options B and C in the borough's local plan, sparked a fierce debate between residents and naturalists because of the proximity of the proposed development to ancient woodland, such as Upper Barn and Crowdhill Copse Woods. Councillor Solid, who's been a councillor in Eastleigh for the past 19 years, said, "Both Sarah and I believe there are serious issues with the proposed strategic growth options, B and C, that seriously put into question the soundness of the emerging local plan. Both councillors are said to be concerned about the proposed link road, its impact on the River Itch in special area of conservation, and the feasibility of running a link road under the railway bridge in Albrook." Councillor House, council leader and leader of the local Democrats Party, said, "Several councillors have decided to reach a decision on the local plan before all of the evidence is available to take an informed decision. That's their right and their decision. But in the process, they are ruling out tackling traffic congestion to improve the quality of life of Eastleigh residents."
Concerns over the impact of social media on children's privacy. A report by academics from Winchester University has raised concerns about the impact of social media and broadcasting on children's privacy and well-being. The rise of sharenting, YouTube families and programmes centred around broadcasting the lives of children, has led to the report entitled "Have Generation Tagged Lost Their Privacy?", calling for young children to have an independent right to privacy. It also calls for social media and internet companies to have a duty to consider young children's privacy and best interests. It follows the announcement by the government of a new data protection bill, which will give people a right to force social media companies to delete their personal data, including social media posts from childhood. As a society, we're exposing ever younger children more and more in broadcast media and on the internet by filming them for science entertainment and programmes and by sharenting on social media sites, said Marion Oswald, head of the Centre for Information Rights at Winchester University. Young people may therefore grow up in a world which already knows a lot about them that they've not chosen to share. A child may grow to regret their exposure in the media. We shouldn't put all our eggs in the basket of the so-called right to be forgotten. By the time a child is older, it may be too late. A further recommendation is the introduction of a children's digital ombudsman, who could provide a way for children's interests to be better represented in respect of all forms of digital publication. Helen Ryan, head of law at Winchester University and one of the report's authors, said, "It remains to be seen what the long-term effects, both positive and negative, might be on young children of exposure in broadcast media in science entertainment programmes. We argue that we should challenge the digital social norm that accepts the objectification of young children and the posting of negative comments and images where it might reasonably be expected that a child would not agree." The University of Winchester's Centre for Information Rights has now launched a new study into this issue, which will see researchers interview older children who were involved in reality TV programmes at a young age and their parents.
Vile, disgusting act of charity con. The moment a brazen woman tried to con staff at a Hampshire shop and falsely claim a dead girl was her daughter has been caught on CCTV. The woman said she was the mother of Sophie Barringer, who died more than 10 years ago, but whose name lives on in the Sophie's Appeal charity. The incident saw the woman go into the Candy Room sweet shop in Market Street, Eastleigh, where she asked for around £60 from the till and claimed the manager had promised her the money as it was for her daughter, and pointed to a Sophie's Appeal charity box. She claimed her daughter was in hospital and she needed the money for a taxi to the hospital. Staff quickly realised she was trying to con them, and the woman fled the shop before the manager arrived. But the incident has left the mother of Sophie Barringer shocked. Lynn Barringer, 59, from Eastleigh, described the woman as the lowest of the low. She said trying to claim Sophie was her daughter is a disgrace. It's a wicked, disgusting thing to do. She knew nothing about Sophie. She claimed she wanted to visit Sophie in hospital. Little did she know Sophie had gained her angel wings. I'm very grateful to the staff at the candy store for being vigilant and for sharing their CCTV footage. Eastleigh is a small community, and this has angered many, many people. I would say she is the lowest of the low. Obviously, she has never lost a child, otherwise she would never go down that route. The incident happened on August the 6th, and manager at the candy room, Donna Parsons, said, "I think it's absolutely disgusting. It's vile to use someone's dead child to try and get money to go and benefit herself. I spoke to the lady on the phone, and she had been quite aggressive towards my staff. She left as soon as she knew I was coming in. Now the image of the woman has been shared more than 1,000 times online, and police are investigating the incident. Sophie's appeal was started in 2003 by her parents, Lynn and Mike, and some of their close friends following the little girl's diagnosis with Wilms disease, a form of kidney cancer, which claimed her life in December 2004 when she was just 6. Sophie's appeal became the fundraising arm of the Sophie Barringer Trust in September 2005, when the trust was granted charity status. The charity has raised more than £300,000 since it began. A spokesman for Hampshire Constabulary said, "We received a report of an incident in which a woman had entered the candy shop on Market Street in Eastleigh. This is reported to have happened at around 8 p.m. on August the 6th. What was reported to us was that a woman walked into the shop and spoke to a member of staff and claimed that another member of staff had promised her some money. However, the member of staff spoken to on the day said this was not the case. It is currently under investigation and inquiries are ongoing."
Fire crew rescues man from flat. A man was treated by paramedics after being rescued following a fire at a Winchester sheltered housing block. Firefighters were called to Mildmay Court in Eastgate Street on Monday night after the alarm went off in the building. On arrival, they rescued a man, thought to be in his 70s, who was on the floor in one of the flats that was rapidly filling with smoke. Paramedics from South Central Ambulance Service attended to treat him, but it's understood that he did not need to go to hospital. As reported in the Hampshire Chronicle recently, Mildmay Court is one of several City Council-owned buildings that have had their fire extinguishers removed earlier this year because there were no longer any staff on site trained to use them in an emergency. A spokesman for Hampshire Fire and Rescue said, "We were called at 7:48 p.m. One crew from Winchester attended. It was a residential alarm that was sounding. The occupant had fallen and left something on the stove. The fumes were from an overheated pan. The man was conscious and breathing. He was given some treatment and handed over to South Central Ambulance Service."
And on a brighter note, Taste of Wickham will be bigger and better. A Hampshire food fair returns with a bigger and better offering when it returns next month, say the organisers. Thousands of people are expected to flock to Taste of Wickham Festival in Wickham Square on Sunday, September the 10th, which will see more than 60 local food traders showcase their produce. The event, organised by Winchester City Council and the Wickham Chamber, aims to promote the understanding of local produce and support local food traders. Ben Sawyers, chairman of the group, said, "Our aim is to produce a flavour of the variety of businesses and organisations in and around Wickham. Although many products and items on the stalls and displays will be for sale on the day, we anticipate that many of the shops in the historic buildings that surround Wickham Square will be open. The Southern Co-op, the main sponsors of the event, is also putting on cooking demonstrations along with a wide programme of live entertainment and a showcase of live animals."
Shop thieving. Two low-value items were stolen from Poundland in Winchester. Police received a report of a theft incident at Poundland in Middlebrook Street, where two items were taken from within the store. A short time later, a 15-year-old boy was detained on the High Street and questioned by police officers. No arrests have been made at this time, and inquiries are ongoing to resolve the matter.
And there's no real difficulty in guessing the value of what the man stole. Thank you, Claire. And that, I'm afraid, brings us to the end of our extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for you this week. But before we go, another reminder that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 870 370. And we want to thank the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors, Gordon and Liz, and of course many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Richard.
Bye.
And Jerry.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us. And from me, Roz, until the next time, goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Thank you again for listening, and we wish you happy days for the last of the summer. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.